Hello, my name is Lost in Bronx. Today, I'm going to talk to you about patio books, audiobooks, and audio plays, how they differ, and how they're the same. It's basic stuff that you all know, but I'm hoping to cover at least a little fresh ground. Each of these audio media have a history and a pedigree, all of their own, and to one extent or another, they demand different disciplines of their producers and performers, yet they're closely related. And appreciating one lends greater appreciation for the others. Now, patio books are all the rage these days. There are other sources out there tracing the history and current form of the patio book movement, so there's little reason to cover all that here, especially considering that few listeners of this show would be entirely unfamiliar with them. But let's settle on a general definition. Patio books are a form of audio media, often fictive, but not always, that is serialized and published on the internet for download, at least semi-regularly. With an RSS feed, patio book chapters are made available to their audiences automatically through some sort of podcatcher software. But this is only one method of dissemination. The delivered quality of the RSS distribution format places patio books squarely into the old serialized novel family of publishing methods, popular a century or so ago. That is to say, books broken up into regular parts over time, delivered automatically to the consumer. In both the historical and modern cases of this publishing method, said consumers have had to have subscriptions of some sort, or else seek out the story chapters on their own, either at a newsstand for a paper-based serial, or through a direct download on a website for the more modern audio-based version thereof. It's both the serialized quality and the automatic delivery potential of patio books, which, in my opinion, separate them from their sibling literary form, the audiobook. Audiobooks, by and large, are published and distributed complete, that is to say, not in a serialized form. There are some notable exceptions, though, especially in the so-called amateur or volunteer areas of the web, such as the usual method by which public domain books are recorded at places like LibriVox.org and Project Gutenberg. It's even possible to get updates of these public domain works as they're being published, either through automatic email or RSS feed or what have you, which then, going solely by my previous definition, turns them into patio books. The popularity of audiobooks, however, predates the patio book, especially in the commercial end of things. Audiobook versions of most popular fiction and nonfiction titles produced by the major publishing houses have been available for many years and continue to be so. They are a lucrative end of the publishing industry. Patio books, by contrast, are often, though certainly not exclusively, released free of charge, and as such, commercializing these products, like many other aspects of the digital age, has had to come indirectly. Merchandising, donations, and memberships of different kinds are being pursued in the patio book world, and while decent livings for the authors involved seem possible through these methods, thus far, true fortunes have proven elusive. With the possible exception of Scott Sigler, about whom I'll speak more of in a bit, it seems doubtful to me, at least as things currently stand, that the kind of revenue engines created by authors like Stephen King and J.K. Rowling are even remotely possible for patio book authors. As a writer myself, I lament this conclusion, but as a reader, I welcome it. Some of the finest authors in history can currently be found in audio format for free on the internet. I predict that some of the finest that the future will produce will choose to publish their works exclusively, or at least initially, in the patio book format. One of the roadblocks to this, beside the previously mentioned financial concern, is a performance-based one. The best authors are not necessarily the best readers or performers. Some have no interest in or technical ability to record themselves, some have no talent in that regard, and some are just shy. Conversely, the best readers are not necessarily the best authors. Performance for an audience is an inherently different discipline than writing for one. Perhaps the future will bring about an organization or website that acts as a network or clearinghouse between authors interested in the patio book format but who lack the means to pursue this interest, and audio producers and performers who do have the means but not the material to work with. For the moment, though, this sort of easy connection doesn't seem to exist. A pioneer in the patio book format, as I have defined it already, is Scott Sigler, who, in 2005, released installments of his patio book, Earthcore, to an ever-growing, loyal, and eager audience. According to his site, much of which is written in a humorous or tongue-in-cheek manner, so make of this what you will, quote, Scott reinvented book publishing when he released Earthcore as the world's first podcast-only novel. Released in 20 weekly episodes, Earthcore harkened back to the days of serialized radio fiction and picked up 10,000 subscribers along the way, unquote. As mentioned, patio books have an ancestry that goes back a long way, but as an art form of their own, if they are in their infancy, then Scott Sigler is easily their wet nurse. Again, places like LibriVox.org were publishing chapters of public domain books as they were being recorded and became available, true serialization, in and around the same time. But Scott Sigler may be said to be the one to define what we currently understand patio book to mean, even if it's debatable that he was the first to do it, nor did he even coin the phrase. He popularized and found a way to make money off of it, something that still eludes most patio book authors. Now, where does one get patio books? Well, first and still foremost is the dreaded iTunes. I don't like iTunes, and I don't like the Apple Corporation or their products, but they knew what they were doing from a business standpoint when it came to iTunes, because they've been very successful with it. It's been said of podcasts, and by extension we can include patio books, that if you're not on iTunes, then you don't really have an audience. Now, that may be an exaggeration. Maybe. iTunes is a huge source of patio books. If you're a member there, if you like it, you can find lots of free content. If iTunes isn't an option, try PodcastAlley.com or PodcastDirectory.com, PodcastPickle.com. And you can generally go to the author's website for downloads if searching through a massive index isn't thrilling and you already know who or what it is you're looking for. Now, where does one get audiobooks? Well, if you want them for free, because we like free, free is good, try iTunes again, audible.com, audiobooks.org, LibriVox.org, and ProjectGutenberg.org. And there are quite a few others, obviously, so do a web search. Many of the free, as in beer, offerings in these places will be classics or newer public domain works. If you're looking for the latest bestsellers, you'll either have to pay for them at places like iTunes or Amazon, or download them off a torrent or something, which is generally considered bad form by the major publishing houses and the governments that support them, so just be aware. Audio dramas. My definition of an audio drama, as opposed to a dramatic audio production, is something we can more properly describe as an audio play. Often multicast and containing careful direction and, when not produced live, careful editing, they can involve the efforts of many people. Theme and background music are typically included, as are sound effects and what may be defined as voice acting. Audio plays can be of any genre, ranging from high adventure to comedy to drama, musical, and even the docudrama. As represented by Old Time Radio, or OTR as it is referred, audio plays are an intermediary electronic form of performance that span the revolutionary moment of time between the vast period in human history of live theater and the newer one of the various technologically produced media. It ran concurrently with the advent of the motion picture and borrowed heavily from the conventions and formats of that medium, but it also informed it with its own set of innovations. And then came television, which, since pretty much all the early forms of audio drama were commercialized to one degree or another, stole away the money. Hardly the first time one technology displaced another, nor the last, but right there is where we begin to go wrong and misunderstanding begins to creep in. Because the audio play, in and of itself, is not a technology. Radio is a technology. Video could kill the radio star, but it could not kill the audio play. The audio play is simply a method of production, a way of telling a story. In that period of time, the audio play was dependent upon the radio industry for its creation and distribution, and thus, because it was a commercial interest, it depended upon the money flowing into radio from advertisers. The audio play, when directly compared to video, is a preferable form of storytelling in some cases, and vice versa. But by and large, they are two different animals depending entirely upon technologies that cater directly to their needs. Side-by-side comparisons, therefore, tend to be pointless or at least misleading. And before I go further, for the sake of this episode, I want to clarify what I'm not talking about when I say old-time radio. I'm not talking about news, game shows, talk shows, or programs that were strictly musical or variety in nature. Though, truthfully, shows like, say, Jack Benny's defy easy categorization with their sitcom-like structures, guest stars, and musical interludes. I'm making broad generalizations, and there were and continue to be exceptions to each one. Still, I'm eliminating these, specifically, from this talk for three reasons. First, I don't want this episode to be hours long, and it could be, if I drew on every possible historical influence. Secondly, I don't really know those things very well. And thirdly, while they, too, have much in common with dramatic audio media, past and present, they are, at least in my book, the furthest such relatives from my subject today. So, how do audio plays differ from patio books and audiobooks? Well, sometimes they don't, at least not to any great extent, but they can include a wider range of effects and performers. Think of a movie compared to the book that inspired it. The latter, even if it has a clever narrative structure, is a story. Stories can be read by a single person. The former is an inherently larger production, often involving multiple performers. And in the old days, they were oftentimes performed in front of a live audience. That's right, people used to dress up and stand in line for the chance to watch a bunch of actors stand in front of a microphone on stage and read their lines from a script. I read about that when I was a kid, and my parents, who were kids during that time period, often told me about it, and I could never quite get why anyone would want to go watch actors standing in front of a microphone. That is, until I got a chance to see it for myself. More about that in a moment. For now, you might wonder where one gets old-time radio shows. For free of charge, try archive.org. They don't have everything, but they have a lot. It is, however, often convenient to buy a disc of shows from somewhere, as tracking episodes down can take forever. One of my favorite places is otrcat.com, that's otrcat.com, which offers a huge range of old programs from around the world, many, if not all, for only $5 US for a full disc of shows. That can amount to anywhere from 20 to 40 hours of entertainment for only $5. That's tough to beat. The service is good there, and the disc quality is high. Sound quality, of course, varies greatly from show to show, depending upon how they were originally recorded and preserved over the years. But I would hazard to say that if you're listening to a lot of podcasts, you can't be an audio snob as it is. Some sources of newer audio plays include DarkerProjects.com, which produces original productions and fan fiction style shows based on Star Trek, Doctor Who, and others. I kind of think of them as the hacker public radio of genre audio plays, and if you check out their site, you'll know what I mean. While you're at it, check out Decoder Ring Theater at decoderring.libsyn.com, who do new original shows in the OTR style, featuring a Canadian superhero following the Shadow or Green Hornet tradition, going by the moniker of the Red Panda. It's corny fun and suitable for the little ones. But why stop with audio only? If you're lucky or do your research, you may just have the opportunity to see new live radio-style productions performed on stage by actors in a theater. Yes, just like the old days. I'll put a couple links in the show notes. Again, fans of dramatic audio media, those that get the opportunity anyway, should do themselves the favor of checking out what this kind of entertainment is like, because it can be so involving and compelling, it'll make you wish you had a time machine. Snapshot. It's 1996 and I'm walking down a side street in the Soho section of Manhattan in New York City. With me is a lady friend from out of town who's in just for the night to see me. And yes, I thought I was going to get me some too, yet it never happened, but well, that's another story. Anyway, we're walking down the street. It's, I don't know, maybe 6:30 in the evening on a Saturday. Just late enough that most of the art galleries and studios were closed or closing. The industrial culinary supply shops were pulling down their gates, and we were looking for a place to eat. Suddenly, we walk by a sign on the sidewalk. Have to walk around it, really. Which, by chance alone, I happen to glance at. It advertises a night of old-time radio to be performed at 8 o'clock that evening at a hidden theater up the stairs. Well, by this point, for reasons again I won't go into, I knew that romance was not in the wind, so why not do something else, something different and maybe fun? We had no plans, so we went in and, by chance, found someone at the box office, one of those old-fashioned little gilded cage things that made the girl in it look like a canary, and we grabbed some tickets in advance. We left then, and I forget where we ate, we were just killing time anyway, but we made it back for the show and climbed up 4 full flights of stairs in an old, renovated garment factory and found ourselves in a large, pretty theater, spacious, plush seats, purple velvet curtains and all. And the place was packed. I was really glad we didn't count on tickets being available at curtain time. I mean, there are often tickets for sale from no-shows on the reservations, and you can jump on those if you're willing to wait and take a chance. But not this night, no sir. This was a theatrical secret we'd stumbled upon. An open one by the size of the crowd, but I had my eye on off-Broadway stuff in those days, and I am telling you, I'd never heard of this. A professional production company dedicated to doing live recreations of old-time radio shows on stage in period costumes and makeup. You had slick guys in their monkey suits and pretty dames all dialed up. There was a small orchestra and an honest-to-God period-style sound effects station on stage near the actors, manned by a galliced, androgynous creature of tremendous talent and energy who ended the night with a well-deserved standing ovation of his or her own. On the bill was a slice of ABC radio from the late 1940s. Quaint news, hilarious old commercials, and for the main attraction, the piece of resistance, a full recreated episode of The Fat Man.
There he goes into that drugstore. He's stepping on the scales.
Weight, 239 pounds. Fortune, danger.
Who is it?
The Fat Man.
Theater can be magical, but man, this was in a class of its own. The costumes and pageant of it all really helped cement it, but it was a kick-ass audio production in its own right. Yep, I'm saying it. Dramatic audio media watched live beats the living crap out of almost anything on television or in the movies. Seek it out if you can. You will not be sorry. Now, we often hear about the golden age of radio when we study the history of radio drama, and oftentimes it's assumed that this was the beginning and end of quality audio productions. Expressed more inclusively, though, we should probably place the classic era of radio production, ranging from the 1930s to the early 1960s, into a broader context of audio media. This would certainly include classic and golden age radio productions of various kinds, but it would neither begin nor end there. The antecedent of all distributed audio media known today is, surprise, surprise, the live performance. Before the advent of audio recording technology, this was the only audio medium known, and writing and performance specialties sprang up to take on many of the similar formats we recognize today. In ancient times, for instance, there were professional balladeers and storytellers. They recited stories and books from memory for the enjoyment and enlightenment of others, much as patio and audiobook authors do today. There were also ancient theatrical performance styles which involved little action and a great deal of vocal performance. In such productions, the actors would wear costumes and masks, but for the most part stand around on the stage statically reciting their lines. It's not hard to imagine that a person sitting outside listening to the show but not seeing it directly would get pretty much the same show as those that were viewing it. In modern times, as I mentioned before, there have been a large number of quality radio productions that fell and continue to fall outside of the generally regarded era of the so-called Golden Age. But there have been audio media productions since that time that are or have been of high merit, yet which were not necessarily delivered by radio. Now, this might seem like an academic distinction, but it is important, since the rise of the internet podcast in recent years has allowed audio media productions to once again take wing in a highly creative, less derivative manner than commercial radio in the modern era. Now, there are notable exceptions to even this, such as Garrison Keillor's A Prairie Home Companion in the United States, which has been running for many, many years now, and BBC Radio out of the UK, which has a long history of producing high-quality audio dramas for radio, up to and including recent years. But certainly, recent production, even where some semblance of the old days has survived, is at a vastly reduced production rate. This dearth of newly produced commercial radio drama is global in nature, just as it once was a plethora, but computer technology has allowed enthusiasts of audio media to produce and distribute their own creative endeavors for little or no money. Now, at least since the availability of inexpensive tape recording equipment for home use, it has been within the realm of possibility for enthusiasts to write, act in, and edit, at least to a certain extent, their own productions. But distribution was limited only to those people who could get a copy, and that rarely amounted to more than a handful. That has changed. A web search of no great depth reveals new audio productions out there, ranging from genre favorites like science fiction and fantasy to comedy, mystery, and everything else. Shows like these are being made at an impressive rate, consisting of writing, voice acting, sound effects, music, and editing at all levels of accomplishment, ranging from the highly polished to the highly painful. And in that regard, things are certainly in keeping with tradition. While we like to remember the great shows of the Golden Age, we also like to forget that for every gem that was broadcast, there were dozens of duds. So where am I going with all this? Well, as I see it, and I emphasize again, this is purely my opinion, we stand on the edge, or in fact may already be in, the midst of a new golden age of audio media production. Like the original, no one at the time necessarily knew how good things were until they were no more, so to speak. I think it would behoove anyone who has an interest in audio media drama, past or present, to investigate the historical and current trends and milestones. Podiobook authors and producers can certainly learn a lot from listening to the very best audio drama of days past and present. Arguably, the apex of the first golden age in the United States was the old-time radio show Gunsmoke. Now, I'm not a fan of the Western genre, but you don't need to be in order to appreciate the quality of this show, or indeed to enjoy its stories. And that broad appeal was the key to its enduring success, and make no mistake, it was very successful. It enjoyed a run of almost 9 years on radio, and with a different cast, crossed over to television and ran for 20 years. On radio, it was smart, the writing was tremendous, and the acting outstanding. It was a program in a medium which was then quite mature, and it was intended for a mature audience. It was surprisingly violent and even disturbing at times, much more so than its television descendant was ever allowed to be, often featuring psychopaths, rapists, and murderers of all stripes, not to mention the occasional duel at high noon. And the discipline of sound effects reached its zenith with that show, crossing in and of itself and without question into the realm of art. The episodes that survive, and most of them do, can be found at the Internet Archive. I'll have a link in the show notes, and I urge you, no, I admonish you to check it out. I bring up that show because it is a stellar example of what dramatic audio media can be. Radio has been described as the theater of the imagination, and if you agree with my earlier descriptors, so indeed are all forms of dramatic audio media, whether live, recorded, audiobook, audiobook, or full-blown production with cast and crew. The best example I ever heard to illustrate this power of audio media was something this simple. Say, for the sake of argument, you have a sound effect like this. You are producing a silly, audio-based comedy of some sort. At one point, you're a performer says to someone else, either real or imagined, "Hey, you there! Toss me that piano!" Your performer was just tossed a piano. Something absolutely impossible to do live or without animation of some sort on film or television. With one single sound effect and a spoken line to support it, you have enabled the listening audience to create the action, however absurd, for themselves. No one listening has any confusion over what just happened. Done with the proper comedic timing, not one member of the audience will question the propriety of the gag within context of the performance, which is never the case with visual-based gags, especially those relying upon special effects. This is audio media's inherent strength, the power to control the finest, most perfectly tuned and tailored cinematographic and special visual effect device on Earth, the listener's own imagination. No CGI, no animation, and no amount of celebrity can compare. Indeed, these things are distracting, taking the freedom and power to create the structure and detail of the moment away from the audience. And unlike visual-based media, everything the listener hears can be a sound effect, including the speaking voice of the performers simply reading their scripts. Budding audio media performers would do well to practice the disciplines and conventions of public speaking, as wit and a good script are only two of the tools available. Diction, volume, careful emphasis, these are talents for some people, but they are learnable skills for everyone else. Actors, presenters, and lecturers who are skilled in the reading of a line or in the delivery of a joke enjoy an increased level of power over the imaginations of the listeners. In other words, talent and skill in speaking puts the audio performer on the same level as sound effects, greatly enhancing the visual aspect of the show occurring in the listener's head. In this regard, patiobooks and audiobooks can have an edge over audio plays, since sound effects, music, and dramatic editing, while often incorporated, are generally less emphasized, and the onus of the imagined visuals is on the performer to a far greater extent. It takes a fine reader and speaker to give a fine performance in audiobooks and patiobooks. There's more wiggle room in this regard, obviously, when it's a multicast, music and sound effects laden, dramatic performance with careful direction and editing. Yet each of these forms, the audio play, the patiobook, and the audiobook, are related and can draw on the strengths normally associated with the others in order to enhance the final production. Anyone serious about audio presentation, whether they're actors, writers, readers, podcast presenters, podcast guests, or even disc jockeys, can enhance their skills and understanding of their chosen medium through a study of the forms, formats, and formalized conventions of audio production. Listen to old-time radio. Listen to audiobooks. Listen to patiobooks. Carefully listen to radio DJs and announcers. Enhanced public speaking and quality vocal performance are learned skills. With the possible exception of throat cancer survivors, anyone who wants to increase the net quality of their dramatic audio media production, whatever it happens to be, can do so simply with practice and by listening to themselves as they speak. Now, you might think I've diverged the talk dreadfully from an overview of the various forms of dramatic audio media, but consider this. The most dynamic and creative works of this type are not being produced by a monolithic industry intent on generating revenue for people, companies, and organizations who are essentially divorced from the art form and creative products they own. In fact, the best stuff happening today is community-based, produced by enthusiasts who love what they do and want to do it better. Some of them are trying to find a way of making a living at their chosen avocation, and if they are successful, it can only benefit the listener, who, well, at least in theory, will have a greater abundance of dramatic audio media to choose from in the future. Supply and demand, offered and sought out by ordinary people, the kind who listen to podcasts like this one. So, the patiobook, the audiobook, the audio play. These are exciting times for dramatic audio media. All across the world, the potential of these forms are being rediscovered and experimented with. And I am convinced we can fully expect great things. Not just a good way to kill an hour's commute or something to listen to while other work is being done, unarguably another strength of these media, but beyond that, great things are coming. It's an art form with many faces, and it's alive and kicking. The future is bright, and the best is yet to come. Now, when was the last time you heard those cliches, and they actually meant something? This has been Lost in Bronx. You can contact me at lostinbronx@gmail.com. That's lostinbronx@gmail. I'd love to hear any commentary, agreeable or otherwise. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.